When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Welcome to the weekend. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Got a question for you, Paul. Do you have your real ID?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, you, I got it sometime last year, I think. It was last year.
Well, remember all the acrimony leading up to May 7th, because that was the absolute deadline, and this had been kicked down the road. They blamed COVID. And
then what happened? When there was this big deadline that came along, and then people who showed up at the airport without a real ID, because a lot of them were probably unaware they needed one, what happened?
Well, they ended up getting pulled aside, I guess, and asked some additional questions.
But they didn't stop them from flying like they said they would, did they?
Yeah, so travelers without real ID now or other acceptable identification, of course, you can fly with a passport. That's 100% acceptable if you have one. But there's some new twist to this story. So AAA's Director of Public Affairs, our friend from AAA East Central, James Garrity, is with us. Good morning, Jim.
Gentlemen, good morning.
So I assume, as Paul indicated, a lot of people did not have their real ID, but they were able to fly by showing some other ways to confirm their identity. But there's a new set of rules that it's going to kick in, I guess, February 1st.
Yeah, and it seems that the airports have had, you know, lack of a better term, backup plans that have helped people get through. And then starting in February, that they're going to have to start charging for that. So it's kind of a continuation of the same thing we've been talking about now, going all the way back to, you know, when I think about 2005, when a lot of this stuff was rolled out, is that, you know, they're enforcing it. And now this is going to be another level of enforcement, it seems like.
And they have another level of technology called Confirm ID using biometric information that's going to be an option too, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so for and really at the heart of this conversation, and even with the new technologies, it's another thing where you look at your personal situation and say, what is right for me? Do you, you know, if you don't travel that much, it might be using that technology when you go through the airport. But and I think really a lot of the people who are regular travelers, business travelers, they saw this coming. They knew Real ID was on the horizon. They've had their Real ID for a long time. But I've talked to people who, you know, they travel once in a very, you know, once in a while. I would say, though, you never know when you have to fly, right? You never know when you might have to jump on a plane. So you really need to sit down, look at all your options and say, what is right for us? And even though, you know, the deadline's passed, you can still go out and get that real ID. Just because the deadline's passed doesn't mean that, you know, you can't go and sign up for it still.
But those opposed to getting one, there is a workaround then, what you're saying, at the airport. You get pulled aside, you have an opportunity to prove your identity in other ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that said, it's going to cost you $45.
And what kind of a delay are we talking about here? Do you have any idea yet?
Well, an exact time, I can't say exactly how long, but it does add time to your trip. So it's personal. I mean, it's personal preference. Do you want to go to the airport a little bit early if you don't fly that much? Do you want to pay that extra money, or do you want to go through the process of obtaining your real ID?
Which costs what? 60 some bucks, right?
I don't know the exact number at the top of my head, but something 60-some bucks, and then it every year when you get it renewed, it's you know, the cost that you would pay to get your license renewed. But for a lot of people, at that process, the difficult part is going to be finding the documents. You know, I know plenty of people who thought they had the right documents and then went in and turns out, well, on a technicality, they did not. So, you know, you got to get on the if you do want to get your real ID, you have to make sure that you get those documents as soon as possible. And if this is the air that you're going to fly, you want to get on that really quick. I know people who are going to be traveling domestically, maybe for the first time in a while, You know, a lot of people haven't traveled since before COVID. It's something you want to get on sooner than later, but there is another option at the airport. It just might not be what's best for you. It depends on your personal situation.
Well, I mean, if you want to spend the $45, fine. But when you renew your license just for a regular 4-year renewal, it's $39.50, and then they tack on another $30
exactly.
for the real ID. So it's $69.50 all told. So if you do the math, it's a little bit cheaper to go through the one time and prove who you are. But on the other hand,
it does bear repeating that if you do have a passport, that is a real ID acceptable piece of identification. That and real ID isn't an ID per se. It's more of a set of standards that your license has met, that you've gone through the extra steps to prove your identity through a couple extra means, as opposed to the normal ID or driver's license.
Yeah, and if you do get pulled aside from the line because you don't have real ID, that process with Confirm ID, they say, takes 10 to 15 minutes on average, which tacks on that much time to your personal process. And a lot of people have asked, why are we doing this anyway to fly domestically? And it dates back to the federal government mandated enhanced forms of identification in the wake of 9/11. So it's been that long till they got this process in place May 7th of last year. So,
everyone kind of in the travel space knows there's been several delays, and it's finally here. Even though it's here now, there are workarounds. I from the travel perspective, at AAA in our travel agency, we're talking with our members and we're walking them through this process. Everyone has a lot of questions. Regular travelers, again, they're kind of in the loop already, but that example still comes up. You never know when you might have to jump on an airplane, right? You never know when, but let's say you have family across the country, if something might come up that you need to travel, good or bad. So it's something you just sit down, think about it, but don't delay,
All right, Jim, appreciate the update. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too.
James Garrity from AAA East Central here in the Pittsburgh area.
Larry, so it's kind of a hassle in that you have to round up all the documents that you need to take them with you to the DMV to get your real ID when you renew your license, if that's the time you pick to do it. But on the other hand, the way I looked at it was, it's really far less inconvenient than spending an additional 15 minutes going through security. I mean, it's already mind-numbingly boring, right? Standing in line waiting to clear through the screenings and everything, and then you got to go prove who you are before you can even do that.
So the real ID documents you need, just to give you a quick update, proving your identity, a social security number, PA residency, 2 proofs, any legal name changes, bringing originals or certified copies to a driver's license center for in-person verification, though you can pre-verify online first. Acceptable proofs include birth certificates, passports, social security cards, W-2s, utility bills, bank statements, marriage certificates. So it's a lot.
Yeah, I did that, and it kicked me back to go and do it in person. They did want a birth certificate with a seal, a stamped seal.
Right.
So I brought that. I brought my social security card. You can't just tell them what your number is. And then I brought them a power bill to show them that I was a resident and had a place here in Allegheny County at the time it was.
And you know what happens? Just by nature, a lot of people hear all that and they go,
Right?
Yeah. They just keep kicking it down the road like the government did for 20 years.
Yes, but, I think that in the final analysis, the most telling thing about all of this is that they wanted to implement this right after 9/11, and look where we're at today.
It took them once they got, so 9/11 is 2001. It took them till 2005 to actually get the legislation from the federal government, then took 20 years to implement.
And it's still not fully implemented.
No, and that's part of the reason they made a deadline, but they had to make provisions, as we're seeing now, but now they're trying to strengthen it up again. So that's a lot of bureaucracy.
Well, I would like to just say that that's your tax dollars at work, and mine too.
20 years to get that implemented.
Oh, man.
It's still not there yet, 100%. When the weather turns bad, it will again here. We're a long way from winter being over, even though it feels like spring this morning. Check out the KDK Radio Storm Center, brought to you by Duquesne Light Company, larger than light. Still the fallout from the Post-Gazette's announcement that they will cease operations in May 3rd, with some people hoping that someone will step up and do something to at least keep, even if it's a digital online presence. But so far, that hasn't happened. And what did they say, about 5,000 people overall, all in, will lose their jobs?
No, 500.
500.
Yeah, 500.
I was going to say 5,000 sounded like a lot. Still, if you're one of those 500, certainly, where do you go in an industry that's shrinking?
Yeah. It's hope. Maybe there's maybe someone will see an opportunity here. Someone with an entrepreneurial spirit and access to cash might see an opportunity here to reformulate the PG in a more digital direction, maybe on a smaller scale, but continue to provide journalism at the level that they've been doing it. Because, I mean, let's be honest, they've got the biggest newsroom in town, and they have more reporters covering more stories than any other entity I can think of.
Yeah, and as also Marty Griffin had pointed out yesterday, based on where they were at their peak with reporters, they're just at a fraction, but they still represent a journalistic core group that covers a lot of ground. And you mentioned the sports section, which important to people in this town.
I mean, I fell in love with their sports section back when Bob Smyzik was still writing for the PG, and I've got quite a good lineup of writers. And their beat reporting on sports is excellent as well. If you follow the Penguins, if you follow the Steelers or the Pirates, they've got it covered pretty well.
So the fact is that for many people, the coverage will change. And for other people, again, I bring up the fact that what you see on social media, these little clips and bites, and, you know, a lot of what's put out there is just not true. It's made, in many cases, for entertainment value. So,
or it's wannabes, you know, wannabes who are trying to, you know, have a scoop, and when they're posting on speculation, making it look like news when it's really hasn't.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Even been confirmed.
So the Steelers hosting the Houston Texans. Next hour, we're going to talk to one of the gentlemen from the flagship station in Houston that covers their team, and their thoughts coming to Pittsburgh with a team that's on a roll with 9 straight wins heading into this playoff game against the Steelers on a Monday night, where the Steelers at home are extraordinarily successful.
Yeah, what a showdown, huh?
It really is.
And the Steelers seem to be peaking. I mean, in the past, in this season, it's been, you know, feast or famine. You don't know what you're going to get in any particular week, but maybe that's going to change here.
And speaking of football, last night the Fiesta Bowl, the Miami Hurricanes, maybe the underdog, certainly just getting in the playoffs. A lot of people felt it should have been Notre Dame. And I remember Nick Saban saying, if the Hurricanes get in, they're going to be a dangerous team. With 18 seconds left, their quarterback, Beck, got a touchdown. And Miami wins the game and will play for the national championship. And the winner from, a lot of people think it's going to be Indiana, of course.
Well, I would hope so. I would love to see that matchup.
Now, they're playing Oregon, who they beat during the regular season.
And Oregon's a very good team. And I will say this, too. So much for all the critics about the ACC, number one. There's going to be a representative for the ACC for the national championship. And guess who's not involved?
SEC teams.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shocker. It used to be for the ACC. Clemson was
right
for many years part of the conversation every year. But this year, there will be a new champion since Ohio State got bumped by the Hurricanes last week.
So do you think Indiana will beat Oregon a second time?
You know, it's hard.
It's a tough thing to do.
When two good teams like that, I mean, but they beat them soundly on the road in Oregon.
Yeah.
during the season.
So this will be at a neutral site.
Indiana, it seems like a team of destiny, but now the Hurricanes, watch out.
How can you not root for Indiana with Coach Cignetti and his roots at Indiana University of Pennsylvania and what he's accomplished everywhere he's gone? How can you not be pulling for the Hoosiers? Unless you have, some kind of connection to the University of Miami, I understand, but I really want to see Indiana run the table. This would be great.
Well, it's going to be a great story because they, in, big football conferences in particular, for them, the Big Ten, they have been extraordinarily bad for decades. So for them to be undefeated and have a chance to win it all would be a great sports story. That said, you going to watch any of the wild card weekend games in the NFL?
Oh, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to Sunday. I was a little disappointed to see that there weren't going to be any Saturday games. But the early afternoon game on Sunday, what is that? That is Buffalo-Jacksonville at 1 o'clock. The game is in Jacksonville. Probably be texting back and forth with friends from down there. I lived there for a few years before moving here to Pittsburgh, which was definitely an upgrade. Having said that, I'm kind of excited to see if the Jaguars can knock off the Bills, who haven't had such a great year this year. They've got a great quarterback, though. And then the afternoon game, 4:30, it's the 49ers and the Eagles. And it's at Philadelphia, but I think, don't you, that the 49ers are going to win that?
They should. And then Sunday night at 8:15, the Chargers and the Patriots.
And that's at New England, right?
Yeah, but there are two Saturday games, too.
Oh, there are.
Yeah, 4:30 Saturday, it's the Rams and Carolina Panthers. And then at 8 o'clock, good game, Chicago and Green Bay.
Those scoundrels on my sports app don't include that. How about that?
So, yes. Yeah. They have.
Well, Rams-Panthers. Well, there's a good game right there.
So, if you like football.
But I think the Rams will probably clean their plow. I mean, which is the better team, right?
And we'll see if Indiana can beat Oregon.
Packers, Bears? And the Packers don't have their starting quarterback anymore. I don't think the Bears are starting to maybe dominate there.
But the game, obviously, the Pittsburghers care about is Monday night. And we'll find out what they're saying about us in Texas coming up next hour. This summer, the nation will celebrate its 250th birthday. With all the good, the bad, and the ugly that goes with it, much of the history over the years has been a story of success. And joining us is somebody who really his resume is really impressive. Michael O'Hanlon is an author. And Michael, appreciate your time this morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
As an author to Dare Mighty Things, you call this Understanding the Nation's DNA. And what kind of deep dive did you do?
Well, I tried to understand our military strategies in peace and war over the whole 250 years, going back to the American Revolution. And one thing I was struck by, and maybe at some level it's obvious, but it sunk in more deeply as I did the project, was that we've always been a very assertive country. Sometimes we like to tell ourselves that we, our forefathers and foremothers came over from Europe to get away from all the wars over there, and we just wanted to build a North American paradise and mind our own business and got dragged into the world wars against our wishes, et cetera. But what I find is that even from the get-go, we were already pushing, bursting at the seams, obviously westward expansion, many battles against Native Americans, a war against Mexico from 1846 to 1848, which gave us the southwest of the country. And we just had this energy, and we believed in the mission, manifest destiny, the idea that we had a great experiment in democracy that we were promoting and trying to include more and more people and more territory. And I think there was a lot of truth to that, but you just can't deny the assertiveness. And so I think Americans, we need to understand that we are restless, breathless, assertive, entrepreneurial people, not just in business, but in foreign policy and in national security policy. And we're not really a peaceful people. I think we're a good people. We've done a lot with our power that's been constructive, but we are not shrinking violets. And so if there's an international incident today, we shouldn't necessarily trust our own instincts for how to react. We sometimes overreact. And I think that's been a tendency in our history as well. So there's a lot of good in the history. I think it's mostly a very positive record. But there have also been plenty of mistakes, and there is this consistent pattern of high energy and assertiveness.
How does this fit into what's happening right now in the world with Venezuela, with now the imprisoned wife and former president, and then the conversation about taking Greenland?
Well, the part about taking Greenland distresses me, and I really hope it's not serious, because, you know, one of the things we did in the 19th century was expansionism, but it doesn't apply to today's world. It would be seen as a highly aggressive and, you know, really unwarranted approach in today's world. Back the U.S.-Mexico War of 1846 to 1848 might be the best parallel. But let's think back to that time. Mexico had only been independent for 25 years. The lands that are now California, Nevada, Arizona, Texas had been part of the Spanish Empire for a while. Texas, of course, changed hands multiple times, but there wasn't really a strong Mexican presence. When we took that part of the country and made it into our own, it was not the kind of situation that we have today, a world in which we've realized you can't just change borders by force. And we've all been trying to push it against Vladimir Putin, as he's done that in Ukraine. So there is a history that sort of, you know, that Trump would be building on if he did this sort of thing. But it's a history that doesn't really apply to today's world. I think the Venezuela action is a little more interesting, a little more debatable, and it does harken back to the so-called Monroe Doctrine and then the Theodore Roosevelt corollary to the Monroe Doctrine that said we have a special interest in what happens in the Caribbean, Central America, Mexico, down to Northern South America. And, you know, again, I'm not endorsing what happened, but I think that there is a lot of history that shows the United States is pretty muscular in dealing with the near abroad. So in that regard, President Trump is not really a complete outlier.
And that said, and for those who don't know, what are the highlights of the Monroe Doctrine that people who didn't pay that much attention in American history class, what is that? What does it mean in this context?
Well, here's 1823, President Monroe sees that many of the countries in South America, especially, are getting their independence from Spain and Portugal. And he says no European power should try to move in or try to exercise influence anywhere in the Western Hemisphere, anywhere in North or South America. That's something the United States will supervise. And the amazing thing is that in 1823, we were a small country. I mean, we were growing in territory, but a small population. We didn't really have much of a navy. We didn't have much industry. And we were claiming the right to supervise things as far away as the southern cone, you know, Chile, Argentina. It was, in a way, a very audacious kind of American statement. And it didn't really mean we could do it. You know, in fact, there were some future crises where we got sort of, you know, demonstrated to the world that we couldn't really back up those words, crises with Chile and others subsequently. It really took until about the era of Theodore Roosevelt that we started to have a big enough navy and a powerful enough country that we could exercise more of this leverage with our military in the nearby neighborhood, Caribbean, Central America. So the Theodore Roosevelt corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, which came about 80 years later, 1904, that was something we were then able to back up more or less. And that's something that President Trump is now trying in a way to imitate and rearticulate.
Fascinating. I love history. And you do quite an extensive deep dive into America's DNA as we get ready to celebrate America's 250th. Michael, appreciate your time. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Michael O'Hanlon, who authored To Dare Mighty Things.